Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up on Martin Luther King Day, we will have our 16th annual one-minute readings about any ethnic group other than your own. We think it's a fitting tribute to at least one aspect of Dr. King, who always tried to reach across racial and ethnic lines and other kinds of identity lines for understanding. And this year, we want you to email us in advance and tell us what you would like to read for your one-minute reading about any ethnic group other than your own. And we're going to try to pick out the best of the bunch and save some of you some work, because so many people line up and then never get on when we just do it as a call-in. So pick out a reading. Please email us. Tell us what group you're in, if you're willing to do that, and what reading about some other group you would like to do, and we will get back to you and choose enough of you to fill up an hour. So if you have a one-minute reading about any ethnic group other than your own that you'd like to join us with on Martin Luther King Day, please email us, put MLK Reading in the subject line, and email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. Well, back to the hanging of Saddam Hussein now. The major papers are reporting today that the U.S. tried to intervene to delay the execution past the Muslim holiday of Eid ul-Adha, but that Prime Minister Maliki wanted it right away. The New York Times says Maliki was afraid of a mass kidnapping to hold people as ransom for Saddam's freedom, knowing the execution was imminent. Meanwhile, investigations have begun into how the execution was carried out, including the taunting of Saddam by some of his executioners and the cell phone video or videos that have wound up on the web. Washington Post columnist Eugene Robinson had some thoughts about all this in yesterday's paper, and he joins us now. Mr. Robinson, welcome back to WNYC. Hello from New York.
All right, good to be here, Brian.
You wonder in your column about who brought those cell phone cameras and what their motivations were. What do you think?
You know, it's hard to tell. I mean, the first assumption I think you make is that security should have been fairly tight at the execution of Saddam Hussein. So how did anybody get a cell phone in there and then take it out and start filming with it? There are a couple of reports today that at least among the people who had cell phones at the execution were a couple of fairly high-ranking government officials. So did one of them leak this video to the internet? That doesn't sound quite right. It's hard to know in terms of motivation. What I think it tells us is something more about the sectarian divides in Iraq and how deep they run, and how difficult they will be for the Iraqis or anybody else to get a handle on. In terms of a specific message, it could have been a message to Shiites that, we finally gotten rid of the terrible Saddam Hussein. Could have been a message to Sunnis. Look what they did to Saddam. Look what they could do to the rest of us if we don't hang together.
One of your provocative pieces of speculation, you ask, is it possible he was working for the government, which wanted to send a message of solidarity to Muqtada al-Sadr, who needs to be kept inside the tent if the government is to survive? How possible do you think that is?
Well, it's certainly true that the government needs to keep Muqtada al-Sadr inside the tent, and it's kind of curious that the one kind of moment in the video that everybody really seizes on is when people start taunting Saddam
with the name
Muqtada, 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 right? And he kind of looks up and says, Muqtada, you know, what's this about? So, you know, again, maybe not that specific message, but it could have been. I think it's probably more likely that it was done by, you know, someone at least allied with the Shiite government, and that it was released more in the spirit of kind of pride. You know, look at what we've finally done to Saddam Hussein, who tortured and brutalized our people.
Go ahead. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
And that sort of thing, I imagine would probably be beneficial in keeping the followers of Muqtada al-Sadr, you know, inside this very shaky coalition that this unity government has.
Eugene Robinson from the Washington Post, my guest on WNYC. We can take your phone calls at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email Brian Lehrshow at WNYC.org. Am I wrong, or didn't the Iraqi government also officially record the execution expressly to distribute it, to dispel any conspiracy theories that might get started that Saddam was really still alive?
Right. The Iraqi government wanted to record the execution. I think the idea also was to show the world that this was done properly and in a dignified manner. Right? That didn't quite work out. And the recording that the government released, of course, had no sound. And it ended right before the execution, so you couldn't tell. You didn't know of all this kind of back and forth, this taunting.
I
and
see. So that's the difference between the official and the unofficial videos. Because
right.
I was wondering, if they recorded it for distribution anyway, then why is everybody so upset about these additional videos from the cell phones? But I guess that's why.
That's why
the sound and the the continuation through the hanging. Do you have
right.
any? Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, you go ahead.
Well, I'm curious if you have any problem with how the television media in this country handled broadcast of the execution tape, specifically showing the tape to the extent that they did.
I don't think I do have a problem with it. You know, I grew up journalistically here at the Washington Post, where we are more squeamish than most major newspapers, for example, much more squeamish than the New York Times about showing, you know, dead bodies and other kind of gruesome and upsetting images on our front page or on any of our pages. So I tend to, because of that journalistic upbringing, I tend to be fairly conservative about these things. But this was a signal moment in the history of Iraq. This was the man about whom this whole war was waged, and the decision had been made to carry out the execution in a hasty manner. I think the television networks had to show us as much of it as they could.
Yeah, we're not gonna get a debate going on this, at least between you and me, because despite all these people expressing their squeamishness, I think, and I don't know if this is a radical position, but if a major world figure is executed by his government and video is available, that it's something that television almost has an obligation to air. And why squelch it when you know all the TV people themselves are going to view every last inch of tape in the privacy of their newsroom anyway?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm always uncomfortable when we in the news business have, you know, images or news or information that we find, you know, newsworthy, and we don't share it with people. And so I think you had to do it.
Bob in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Bob.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that the problem with just about in a general sense in that area of the world is that we approach everything from our perspective, Judeo-Christian morals, and, you know, we treat it like it's a dispute between the Baptist and the Episcopals. And, I mean, you know, if somebody killed your father or your, you know, half your family, that might be the way that they, you know, deal with it. I mean, didn't we have some, in the infancy of our nation, didn't we do things like that too?
You want to react?
Well, we didn't do, to my knowledge in U.S. history, we didn't do a whole lot of things like that. I mean, we have capital punishment in this country, and in years past it was, conducted by hanging. So I imagine there probably were scenes like that.
Well, I think the point, though, is that they were trying to establish Iraq, that is, through the U.S. invasion, the U.S. was trying to establish Iraq as some kind of modern democracy in the heart of the Arab world, and yet it devolved, at least as symbolized by this execution, into the fight of one tribe against another tribe and, you know, chanting the name of the new murderous strongman as you hang the old murderous strongman. You know, what kind of progress is that?
You know, I think that's absolutely right, and I think that it's a reflection of, you know, how little we really understand about the forces that are at work in Iraq. You know, the fact that people here are shocked by these images, that the U.S. government, you know, tried to delay the execution apparently and appeal to reason, and you know, this was the result.
By the way, because you can't get away with anything with our astute listeners, when you were talking about the importance of unity, somebody just emailed and said, was there any pun intended when your guest said, look what they can do to us if we don't hang together? So just,
there was no pun intended.
Just so you know, so you can't get away with anything with our listeners who hang on every word.
I guess they do.
On yesterday's program, we posed the question, if the pardon of Gerald Ford was a good thing for national reconciliation, what was the hanging of Saddam Hussein? And noted that Dick Cheney praised the pardon at one of the funeral ceremonies for Gerald Ford, but was behind the invasion of Iraq. But what's your understanding of the role of the U.S. in the execution?
Well, as you know, the U.S. has had custody of Saddam Hussein since his capture, and it was probably right that U.S. custody was the only way to ensure that Saddam wasn't lynched or didn't escape. So the U.S. had held him, and it seems that the U.S. Duly turned him over when the Iraqis announced and I suppose demonstrated that they had fulfilled their legal requirements for the execution, and when they insisted that they were going to go ahead with the execution, at the beginning of this very important religious holiday, which is you know, one of several probable violations of Iraqi law. They're not supposed to do it this way, but as you mentioned in the intro, Prime Minister Maliki says he was concerned that there would be some sort of mass kidnapping in an attempt to ransom Saddam to freedom.
You think maybe that's a good enough reason?
You know, what's good for me? No, that's not a good enough reason. And it for me, I think the execution itself, to say nothing of the way it was carried out, is quite likely to exacerbate Iraq's problems rather than cure them. But, you know, I didn't live through the Saddam Hussein years. I understand how strong people's feelings might be, but no, I don't think that's a good enough reason. There was a very interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal, I believe yesterday, about Prime Minister Maliki and his long career as a kind of Shiite activist fighting the Saddam Hussein regime, and so he must have had some very strong personal feelings. The man had killed friends and compatriots and probably family members of his, and he pretty obviously wanted to get rid of the guy.
Joanne in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joanne.
Well, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Not to stretch out any more conspiracy theories, but I felt that the fact that they decided to execute him right after this trial that they just had and did not carry on the next trial about the gassing of the Kurds was a little bit hinky, in that I feel that he probably had a lot of information that he could have spilled out about the U.S. and our contribution to the arms and the weapons and the biological drugs or weapons that we supplied him many years ago. And I think that they just wanted to get rid of him as quickly as possible and just shut him up because, I don't know, I think that we are responsible for everything that went on there and even up to his execution. So,
Joanne, thank you. And what do you think about that, Eugene? You know, I was at least thinking that what an opportunity missed for more truth in Iraq that I thought for Iraqis, you know, and who am I to say for Iraqis? But I thought for Iraqis that they would want these trials so they could hear the details and the evidence presented against these acts of mass murder that were even worse than the one he was convicted of.
Exactly, and many did. There was apparently a dispute between Prime Minister Maliki, who's a Shiite. You know, as you know, Saddam was convicted of the murder of 148 Shiite civilians, and that's why he was executed. The trial on the gassing of the Kurds had not run its course. Of course, we didn't have any truth about what really happened there, and the president of Iraq, who was a Kurd, Talabani, apparently wanted to let that trial, reach some conclusion, to have him convicted on that as well, and to get all the information out, so that there would be some sort of vindication or some sort of at least exposure of his crimes against the Kurdish people, but the trial on the crime against the Shiites was first, and then boom, the execution. So we will not have a chance to see Saddam Hussein tried on his other crimes.
By the way,
or hear about U.S. Support of him during the Iraq war.
I'm not immune from being corrected by the listeners either. Apparently, I said the pardon of Gerald Ford before. Of course, it was the pardon of Richard Nixon by Gerald Ford. As far as we know, Ford didn't do anything requiring a pardon. Hey, here's something out of left field. See if you have a quick thought on it in our last 30 seconds. Saddam's last words, which you wrote a little bit about, he was challenged by the guy. He challenged the guy who chanted Muqtada at him by asking him where his manhood was. Any thought on bringing manhood into it real quick?
I don't know. I mean, I guess that's Saddam has postured himself or positioned himself as the stalwart, manly defender of Iraq and Iraqi nationalism and Arab nationalism. I mean, that's kind of the way I think he saw himself until his death. Listen to what he said in court. I mean, he essentially said, "You're the women for these Americans who
notions
are running your country."
Notions of manhood seep into this war in many ways, which we'll explore on another show. Eugene Robinson, Washington Post columnist, thank you very much for coming on with us.
Very good to be here, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.